Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 past 7 on this Tuesday, November the 11th. A spokesperson for Barack Obama says the president-elect and President Bush talked extensively yesterday about the economy and foreign policy during their first Oval Office meeting. They met for nearly 2 hours. Obama spokesperson Robert Gibbs says the conversation included the housing industry and the auto industry. Here's what President-elect Obama had to say about bailing out the big three automakers at his first news conference last week.
The news coming out of the auto industry this week reminds us of the hardship it faces, hardship that goes far beyond individual auto companies to the countless suppliers, small businesses, and communities throughout our nation who depend on a vibrant American auto industry. The auto industry is the backbone of American manufacturing and a critical part of our attempt to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. I would like to see the administration do everything it can to accelerate the retooling assistance that Congress has already enacted. In addition, I've made it a high priority for my transition team to work on additional policy options to help the auto industry adjust.
So the question we ask this hour, should the government bail out the U.S. auto industry? Over the weekend, the Democratic leaders of the U.S. House and Senate, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Paulson and the Bush administration urging expanding the $700 billion financial rescue to include the car companies. Is this a good idea or not? Bailing out the big three. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dennis Fragg. He is president of the Automotive Consulting Group, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you do you think that the federal government has to bail out the auto industry?
I believe that it is imperative that the government bail out the auto industry.
Why?
When you look at the total employment within the U.S. and you look at the domino effect that the big three have upon the economy of the country, I think that not bailing out the industry would have a detrimental effect on the total U.S. economy.
So does it make sense to just expand the $700 billion bailout to rescue the car companies?
Yes, it would. And when we say bail out the industry, what we're saying is, or what I'm saying, is that there should be strings attached to the bailout. It should not be a carte blanche bailout like we have with the banking industry today. With the banking industry, we're giving billions of dollars in loans. The banks are getting the money, they're hoarding it, they're not using it for the purpose it was intended for. There needs to be strings attached, there needs to be a council or a group that oversees the distribution and the expenditure of the funds so that it is put to proper use.
Well, what is that proper use for the car companies?
Well, for the car companies, number one, it's to have them survive on a day-to-day basis. With the credit crisis we're in today, it is very, very difficult for anyone to get a loan. When you look at car purchasing, you need a credit score of 700 or over currently in order to qualify. Very few people have a credit score of over 700. When you look at the number of job cuts, when you look at the news, everyone is concerned about their job. They look at their neighbors losing their jobs. Individuals are concerned about going into debt for 3 to 5 years to pay for a new vehicle. So they're just holding back and not purchasing vehicles. So that is having a detrimental effect on the industry, putting a cash strain on the industry. And, you know, it is a significant part of the problem.
Yeah, so the companies have to have this money just to have day-to-day operating expenses.
They do, and small businesses do. Everyone does, and really the government is doing the citizens of the U.S. a disservice right now and just distributing the funds to the banks and the financial institutions, AIG, and not putting any restrictions on how that money is to be used.
I'm trying to get at how dire a situation are the car companies in right now?
Well, GM is in a very, very dire situation. Ford is in a much better situation because a year and a half ago, they went out and got credit. They pledged much of their assets, but they did line up credit. So they have the most funding available today. Cerberus has a lot of funding lined up. However, they are having pressures from their lenders to dispose of the assets within the Chrysler Group. And General Motors, as we see, they are bleeding cash on a very, very serious basis, and they are in most dire need right now. But all three companies are on very, very slippery footing.
We are talking with Dennis Vierag. He is president of the Automotive Consulting Group, talking about the talk over bailing out the U.S. auto industry. Over the weekend, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid sent a letter to the Bush administration urging expanding the $700 billion financial rescue package to include car companies. What do you think of this idea? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest says that this is not only necessary, it's inevitable. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November the 11th, Veterans Day. And Ben Marins and his guest after 5 o'clock today will talk about Veterans Day. Tribute to our veterans coming up later today. We are talking about the big three automakers and their financial problems and the calls to have the government rescue them. Federal bailouts may shift into higher gear with new proposals to save the big three. We are talking with a guest who says a collapse of the auto industry would have a catastrophic effect on the U.S. economy, so federal help is needed. Our first caller is Mary in Sawyer County. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm kind of somewhat opposed to the idea of doing this big federal bailout. I think that we have to be really careful where we throw our money. There's been a real lack of innovation in the American car companies. I know I've always bought Fords, but I need a vehicle that's going to get at least 40 miles to the gallon, and they don't even make one anymore. So I think that a company that's too big to fail is too big to exist. And what are we going to pay them to do? Continue to make vehicles that nobody wants?
Mm-hmm. All right. What about that, Dennis?
Well, I'm in total agreement. And let me say that I am not happy with the situation that the domestic auto industry is in, and I'm not happy with a proposed bailout. However, when I look at the consequences, I have to say that it's in the best national interest for the bailout. As far as the product portfolio the companies have currently, when you look at the vehicles that are that were designed and built for consumption, you have to place some of the onus on the consumers also, because they have demanded over time large vehicles with low fuel economy. You know, they wanted SUVs, they wanted pickup trucks. There's a small percentage of the population that wanted small vehicles, and the manufacturers have produced vehicles that have high fuel economy. However, the sales of those vehicles have been minimal. Now, looking into the future, yes, we very much need fuel-efficient vehicles. But again, looking at the situation, government is actually holding back a lot of the high fuel efficiency technologies that are available. When you look to Europe, they have a significant fleet that gets over 40 miles per gallon. These vehicles are powered by diesel engines, but the U.S. EPA and the California Air Resources Board have had restrictions on the type of emissions that vehicles are allowed to emit, which is precluding the diesel from the vehicle powertrain mix. So when you look at the situation, you have to look at it in a complex manner. It's not a straightforward black or white. There are implications and there are reasons the industry has not produced the high fuel efficiency vehicles that other countries have. So moving forward, yes, we need this. Moving forward, we need diesel power. We need hybrid electric vehicles. We need a rounded portfolio of products that will be offered. But the industry needs assistance in order to do that now.
Yeah. Well, this talk of assistance comes too late for Janesville, Wisconsin, though, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes.
There's no chance that that plant could be used for these hybrid electric vehicles of the future.
That is correct. One of the big problems that domestics made was that they were not willing to invest in flexible tooling for their factories. The Japanese companies have been masters at manufacturing through the use of flexible manufacturing techniques. However, tooling for a flexible plant is more expensive than what we call a traditional plant. The domestics were not willing to invest the additional funds and flexibility. They are today, and they have been for the past several years, but when you go back in time, the executives at the Big Three have been very short-sighted in terms of a number of things.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal editorialized against what it called nationalizing Detroit yesterday, and besides the issue of that you just addressed, it writes it the automakers won't address Detroit's fundamental problems in making cars that Americans won't buy. But here's the other one: and labor contracts that are too rich and inflexible to make them competitive. What about that issue in terms of the financial health of automakers?
Well, that is in part true. What I have found in dealing with the UAW is if you go to the International Union in Detroit, if you go to the leadership, they are very much like the leadership of the automakers, very inflexible, very set in their ways. If you go down to the local level, for example, if you went to Janesville and you talked to the local union, the locals are more than willing to provide concessions, to work with the company, to save the jobs. The international leadership is actually hindering the locals in terms of changing the old ways. So not only do you need new leadership at the top of the auto companies, you need new leadership at the top of the union.
Let's take another call. Peter in Lancaster. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm down in the valley here, and I don't know if my reception's very good. Hey, listen, thanks for taking my call. You know, it's a very, very complex, problem. I think you have to go back to the very root of what they're doing, and I really believe that the automobile manufacturers have an obsolete product. But like the speaker said, they're not alone in their product. The American public has bought obsolescence for the past several years. And, you know, to bail them out, while I understand the logistics of it and the financial aspect and the impact it has, it just really seems like throwing good money at bad, whereas you might take a look at the bigger picture and realize that transportation is at the heart of America, period. We have to have transportation. I have to have transportation. How I get to work is somewhat irrelevant, whether it's four wheels or two wheels or three wheels, whether it's, you know, gas-powered, hydrogen-powered, that's irrelevant. We have to be mobile. And so before we throw all this money at an obsolete industry, perhaps we need to take a look at rethinking the transportation situation in America. Again, the speaker had touched on some of the issues that are really at the heart of the problem. One is the labor unions. The other is the litigation, the federal regulations with manufacturing. It's too rigid. There's vehicles out there. I know Volkswagen had a concept car years ago, 100 miles to the gallon. Couldn't sell it here in America. Wouldn't pass the federal mandates. There's lots of concept things out there, particularly from Europe and Japan, but they won't pass the American safety standards. And that has to be addressed at a different level. So do we bail them out? I think we need to ask some tougher questions. And I appreciate the time and having you let me speak.
All right. Thanks for asking some of those tougher questions. Dennis Viereg, what are the answers to those questions?
Well, you know, the caller is absolutely right. You know, we have to address transportation within the country. You know, one of the potential solutions is mass transportation. But again, you have to go back to the public and say, would you be willing to utilize mass transportation? We have it in the in the cities, but the use of mass transportation on a broader scale really has not been accepted by individuals in this country due to either inconvenience or whatever. But you know that is one part of the solution. Carpooling is another. New technology is a solution. You know, hybrid electrics, diesel power. Again, what we are looking at are very, very complex issues. It's not a straight black or white, yes or no. There are a lot of subtleties that people really need to address and understand. And typically what happens is the government, bureaucrats, they do not look at the broad implications or what I call the cause and effect of some of their decision-making. We need more people, more individuals who look at the cause and effect, look at the broader implications of things that take those into consideration when they make rulings.
We have a news break in just a couple of minutes, but do we know, Dennis Viereg, have any idea on how much money we're talking about to assist the big three to pay the bills, the operating costs, and to start some of this retooling?
Well, we're probably looking at two rounds of funding. First round is $25 billion, and the second round would be $25 billion. And the real question is credit going to be freed up so that the economy could get moving again? If we continue in the malaise that we're in the credit markets, this could go on for years, and the $50 billion will be insufficient, and not only will the domestic industry die, but also the foreign auto manufacturers in this country will die because of a lack of sales. So it is a very serious problem, and again, I am personally very critical of Washington in their handling of the whole situation.
Dennis Viereg, our guest, president of the Automotive Consulting Group, talking with us about the proposals to bail out the big three. Wondering what questions you have, what reactions you have to this idea. Our guest says that it's needed, or the effects on the U.S. economy, if these automakers go under, will be devastating. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Veterans Day, Tuesday, November the 11th. The Bush administration is being asked to provide more aid to the struggling auto industry. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid wrote a letter to Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson over the weekend, asking the administration to consider expanding the $700 billion bailout to include car companies. And Barack Obama seems to favor some sort of government assistance for the big three and reportedly talked with President Bush about that during his first Oval Office meeting with the president yesterday. We're talking about that idea with Dennis Viereg, who is president of the Automotive Consulting Group. He says an automobile industry collapse would have catastrophic results for the U.S. economy, so federal help is needed. And our next caller is Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy, Dennis. A number of points that I'd like to make here, if I may, but one of them has been touched upon already, and that is that GM has branches in Europe. It's called Opel. That makes a tremendous line of fuel-efficient vehicles. Ford also has a line in Europe. However, if you go to the European version of Yahoo, yahoo.co.uk, and look up fuel-efficient vehicles, of the top 20, all of them are rated at above 50 miles per gallon. And unfortunately, only three of these are made by U.S. manufacturers, and that is Ford. GM has none in that group. Also, I think GM has been very complicit in the lack of electric and high efficiency cars in this country. Anyone that doesn't believe this needs to go back and revisit who killed the electric car.
Yeah, hold on, Mike. We'll give you some more of your points, but I don't want to forget the ones you've just made. Dennis Viereg, what about that?
Well, that's true. GM is not... you know, it's not free from criticism in this respect. But General Motors, let me say, does make a number of fuel-efficient vehicles. You know, if you look at their vehicles here in the U.S., a number of them get over 30 miles per gallon. But GM has done a terrible job in promoting those vehicles. When you look at Europe, yes, there are. A number of vehicles that get 50 plus miles per gallon, but those vehicles are all diesel powered. And again, when you look at the regulatory environment in the U.S., that precludes us from bringing those vehicles here. So, you know, we need to look at the not only the mix, but also look at the regulatory environment. With regard to hybrid electric or electric vehicles, a true electric vehicle really has technological and cost issues that are beyond the you know, the scope of being able to bring those to market. I, in fact, was an expert witness in the state of California on electric vehicles. So when you look at the technology and the limiting factor in electric vehicles, really is the battery. Electric vehicles could be manufactured so you get, at best, 50 to 70 miles range on an electric vehicle. But that's in the perfect, ideal situation. When the temperature goes below freezing, for example, the range goes from 60 miles to 10 miles. So when you factor those things into you know, into the equation, electrics really aren't viable. But I am a strong advocate of hybrid electric vehicles. And when you look at Toyota, for example, Toyota's on their fifth generation of hybrid technology. GM is still working on their first electric vehicle, the Volt. Ford has come out with hybrid electrics. They've had it in the Mariner and in the Ford Escape. They're good technologies. They get close to 35 miles per gallon. But again, the product offerings in terms of hybrid electric have been limited.
Yeah, let me take Mike. Did you have another point that you wanted to make?
Yes, a couple of them, if I may.
I don't know if we have time for many, but what's your primary point?
Well, the hubris that exists at GM. They came out with, in the latter days of the EV1, the electric vehicle that was sold in California in very large numbers, they came out with a much more efficient battery, and they... when they decided to pull the plug on the EV1, that battery technology was sold to one of the oil companies. You really need to take a look at who killed the electric car. I think the GM should not be killed, though.
All right.
Well, you really have to get your facts straight, Mike, because, number one, the EV1 was never sold. And the battery technology was not sold to an oil company. You know, that goes back to the old times about the 100 miles per gallon carburetor. These technologies just don't exist. And, you know, there's a lot of stories about such technologies, but really, you know, if the technology existed, the auto companies would be producing it because that would give them a significant competitive advantage. And no company is going to let competitive advantage go to waste.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. Next, we go to Ray in Eau Claire. Hi, Ray. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have made a living in the car business for over 20 years. I've been a mid-level manager in a GM store where in those days you didn't do all your ordering by computer. The salesman came in and they had you take this car, this car, this car. And as I complained 10 or 15 years ago about us literally handing a certain segment of the market to the Japanese automakers for the Camry, Accord, Civic, and Corolla, their answer was, we're letting the public make this decision. Well, I think they help the public make the decision by the advertising. You know, there's a certain way to push that. But my point that I wanted to make is I think there should be money, but I think it should go towards research and development. The American automakers, if they should be bailed out by anyone, it should be by the oil companies. ExxonMobil just made, for the sixth quarter in a row, record profits for any corporation in the history of the world. And if that's not tied directly to the auto industry and the mistakes we've made in our decisions on what vehicles to produce here, I don't know what is.
Well, that's an innovative idea. Dennis Vierig, the oil companies should bail out the car makers.
Well, why not the pharmaceutical companies? They have higher profit margins than the oil companies. Why not the financial institutions? Why not the venture capitalists? Why not the hedge funds? The hedge funds have profit mm-hmm. margins of 95% versus 8% in the oil companies. There's plenty of blame to go around. What we have to do is we have to look at not the past, we have to look at the future. You know, how do we move ahead as an industry, and how do we move ahead as a country? The caller is exactly right. We need to invest in research and development. We need to look at litigation. One of the stumbling blocks to new technology is litigation, especially in the transportation industry and the automotive industry. Again, people don't realize the complexities that the industry has to deal with. When you look at the products that the manufacturers produce, you know, even companies like Nissan and Toyota have gone after the large truck, the large SUV, the truck market. They're just fortunate in that they haven't gone to the scale of production that the domestics have, but they have been trending that way. So it's, again, it's not only a domestic industry that's facing difficulty today. Even the foreign companies who are producing vehicles in this country are beginning to face financial problems. And to turn the situation around, we need to develop new technologies. We need to look at the regulatory environment to allow these new technologies to go to market. We need to look at the litigation, the trial lawyers. Every time something happens to anyone, you know, it's always the manufacturer's fault. We are the only country in the world that allows this litigation to happen, and that's part of the problem also. That's part of our downfall.
Let me jump in because it's time for us to check the weather, and then we'll continue taking calls for Dennis Vierig, president of the Automotive Consulting Group. We're talking about the proposed financial rescue of the Big Three automakers. We welcome your thoughts on this, your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest says that it's necessary to bail out the Big Three, talking about why he thinks this will happen, whether we want it to or not. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Tuesday, November the 11th. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll welcome in a guest physician who will discuss his life in the ER and how the stress of continuous life and death decisions alienated his family and nearly destroyed him. We will talk with the author of Something for the Pain coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. Right now, we're talking about bailing out the big three. And our next caller is David in Fort Atkinson. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. How are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hang on just a second.
Oh, I need you to. Okay, go ahead.
I am completely opposed to this bailout. Well, no, I'll say I'm 95% opposed to the bailout. We have got to stop this cycle of boom, bust, and bailout. The Detroit automakers have had 30-plus years to get their act together and to create better, more fuel-efficient cars, and they have utterly failed. I was personally incensed to hear that General Motors, when it was in discussion with Chrysler about a possible merger, wanted the government to provide financial incentive because they were, quote, too big to fail. Well, like your previous caller, any company that is too big to fail is too big to exist.
David, what do you say?
The only way I would consider this bailout is if it came with the proviso that General Motors be broken up into three or four different car companies, that Ford be split into two car companies, and Chrysler, I don't know what to do with them. We bailed them out once before. Maybe it's time they just go under.
All right. What about that type of a scenario, Dennis?
Well, you let me ask the caller about the banks. You know, the banks, we're bailing them out, and they just seem to be buying more banks. So it's not only an auto industry that is, you know, an industry that has big, complex organizations. Breaking up General Motors really does not solve the problem. To qualify what I'm saying, when we look at a bailout, we need strict conditions on how the monies are spent, what they're spent on, and so forth. It's not, you know, it should not be a carte blanche. Sometimes economy of scale comes into play, and when you look at the complexity of the technology that goes into an automobile, you can't have small auto companies developing new complex technologies. If you look around the globe, auto companies are big. When you look at Toyota, they're bigger than General Motors now. So does that mean, okay, we break up Toyota? Mm-hmm. Does that mean we break up a Volkswagen? Size is not the sole factor in success or failure. Really, it's management and leadership. And General Motors has lacked that leadership, and that's why it's been in decline for so many years. Basically, we've had bean counters, financial people, running not only the domestic auto companies, but many, many of the domestic manufacturing companies. When you look at what's happening within Ford, Alan Mulally, who is a operations guy, is doing a wonderful job in keeping that company afloat. They have a number of new products that have come online. He is doing a terrific job, but he understands manufacturing, and he is focusing on product and manufacturing. General Motors has not had that type of leadership in 50 years. And
let me get your response to this email from Amy Joe in La Crosse. I wonder how much of the auto industry's financial woes stem from their lavish bonuses and salary packages for execs. Top-tier execs regularly make tens and even hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses. That money could be devoted to offset R&D costs, healthcare costs, improve liquidity, and, yes, labor costs. I would really like to hear more about how these princely bonuses impact the auto industry.
Well, again, I think we need to get the facts straight. When you look at the auto industry, we're not talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses. You're looking at the financial industries. You're looking at the hedge funds and other industries when you get that type of mm-hmm. bonus. Yes, you do get significant bonuses in the auto industry, but it doesn't approach $100 million. Executive pay is a consideration, and again, going back in the history of the industry, the executive leadership has always given in to union demands during negotiations so that there was not a strike. And the unions have demanded more and more and caused the industry to be uncompetitive in terms of labor costs. Again, that's history.
Yeah.
We have to look at where we are today and how we move forward, how we make the industry strong and sound.
Let's say the $50 billion rescue package does come through with the strings attached as you would like to see them. When do we see the light at the end of the tunnel? When do we see this turnaround? Will this work?
Well, again, much of it is dependent upon the availability of credit for consumers to buy new vehicles. Also, some of it is dependent upon the consumer confidence. You know, if the industry is still in the doldrum, we're going to be manufacturing and selling fewer cars. It's really hard to project, to visualize what the future is going to be with certainty. You know, we could say, yes, at some point in time, demand for vehicles will pick up, the industry will become on solid footing again, but to state with clarity when that's going to happen is just impossible. So
let me take some other calls. Sarah in Salem. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you. You know, I'm sick and tired of having to bail out the incompetency of these businesses. These executives knew this was going to happen. They knew that things were going to go the way they have, yet they did nothing for it. And now the people that are hurting are going to be the workers. I personally am for the bailout only because they're going to let go so many workers, and these workers, a lot of them are going to be factory workers. They're going to be maybe college-educated, mostly high school-educated, and they're going to let these guys and women go, and there's no jobs for them to go to. We're going to have a whole bunch of people out of work, and that's not fair. And I'm sick and tired. I was really appalled, actually, that you just said, sir, that the unions were the ones that helped bring this in. The unions are the ones that are making sure that the people that are working there for the right wage and to make sure that the companies don't use them just to work six, seven days a week and don't give them what they deserve. So if you can't put the onus on the unions, the onus is on the executives who did nothing to expand the lines of anything, and now they're paying the price for it.
I don't know if you've heard all my comments, but I have blamed the executives.
Mm-hmm.
I have blamed the consumer. I have blamed the union. It's not one particular group that's at fault. Everyone is at fault.
And we are talking.
And everyone
millions.
Really needs to step up and help provide the solution. You know, blaming one group or another, is not the answer. But we need to face facts. If you go back in time, the unions have demanded, and the executives have succumbed. They've given in. They've given in so that production keeps up and so that the bonuses are realized every year. And, again, there's enough blame to go around. You know, even the lawmakers, the litigators, everyone here is at fault.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone needs to come together and recognize the state that the economy is in today, and we need to come together with real solutions. Nobody's happy about the bailout. I'm not happy about it. You're not happy about it. But in reality, I believe it needs to happen. When you look at the implications throughout the U.S. economy, we're not only talking the big three. We're talking thousands of suppliers. We're talking dealerships throughout the country. We're talking communities potentially going bankrupt. We're talking about states going bankrupt. Do we want that to happen? Perhaps some of the callers or some of the listeners do. I do. I, in fact, am one individual who doesn't see that. That is the solution. We need a rational approach to saving the U.S. economy, and it's not only the auto industry. It's the financial institutions. It's all of the industries, all of the the establishments that have provided jobs in the past and will provide jobs in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, we only have a minute to go, Dennis, and I very, very briefly, are you optimistic for the future for the auto industry?
Long term, yes. Near term, I'm very concerned.
Yeah, and you do expect that the government, whether we want it or not, will have to send some financial aid to these automakers?
Yes, yeah. And again, I think the aid is necessary, but we need strict conditions on how the monies are spent.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us. Dennis Viereg is president of the Automotive Consulting Group. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. Thanks to Bill Martins and Rob for on-air production and direction. Thank you for listening and for calling in. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, please call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.